Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Today is Tuesday. We have the Blueprint Power Hour. And I want to thank, when TV shows air, they always say the celebrity got his clothes from this place. So I want to thank Dr. John Parker for my wardrobe today. He sent this stuff to me when he was deployed last time. And I love wearing this. Sinking our teeth into the Middle East. Thank you, John Parker, for dressing me for my show. And, of course, without further delay.
Calling all Blueprint Army. Fall in line. It's time for the Blueprint Power Hour with Coach Rob Regish on the Superhuman Radio Network.
Excuse me. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you for welcoming me. And I don't know if you can see this, but as promised, I have the Wade Johnson white lightweight black and white t-shirt on Ogre Compound to support Wade in everything that he does for powerlifting. And I would tell you, please go to Wade Johnson's Facebook page, click on the Ogre Compound and support him, because you're not just supporting someone who's squatted 1,040 pounds drug-free. You are supporting the grassroots lifters that make the sport possible.
Yeah.
Great guy, too. Great guy.
How are you doing?
I am doing well. I've got Molly the Wonder Dog here with me again. Right now, she's chewing on her bone because I put some peanut butter in it. So,
is she trying to get the peanut butter out of the hole in the bone?
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have your toenails grown back yet?
No.
I still can't get over. I've gotten so many messages about that portion of the show last week.
No, it's been 20 years, so I don't think they're coming back.
Okay. If anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, go back to last week's Blueprint Power Hour. Listen towards the end of the show about the time that Coach Rob got mad at his toenails and literally took a pliers and pulled them all off his feet.
Yeah.
You know what? You can't make this stuff up, folks. You can't make it up.
You know, listen, if we have time, we might revisit it. One housekeeping item, because it's getting down towards the end of the month. For those that haven't tried it yet, great opportunity. Tranquilogen is now 20% off. And that includes 20% off the already deeply discounted twin pack and the case of four. Easiest way to take advantage of that is to go to bodybuildingsupplements.com. or Tranquilogen.com and punch in TQ20. That's a huge, huge savings on a fantastic stress relief product, relaxation, the whole nine yards.
Do you think if Tranquilogen and Synthogen blew up tomorrow, I mean blew up like Redcon 1, Aaron Singerman blew up, could you continue to make the product at the quality that it is now? Or is it forever going to be a boutique product because it's so hard to source the raw materials?
Probably the latter. And the only reason I say that is, there's such little profit margin in it. It could never be sold through, let's say, a middleman. And we make it in what the industry today calls micro batches to keep things fresh, right? I mean, these things have a shelf life. You know, they can't stay there forever and still remain potent. So when you're dealing with herbal extracts, you got to keep them, relatively fresh to the consumer. Yeah. Good question. Good question.
So, excuse me, I'm having a little, it just literally started right before the show. I sound like Felix Unger from The Odd Couple right now, clearing my throat. So here's let me get a title up here so we can get this started. So today's first question and first topic actually comes from Andre Clanhans. How do you pronounce that?
I think you got it right the first time.
Okay. He says, Coach Rob, at the age of 45, longevity has become an important focus, and I have been trying to familiarize myself with the latest research findings. This has, however, left me with a bit of a dilemma, as it seems that the practices required for longevity are not conducive for building muscle. That's because they're getting it wrong. Everybody wants to turn off mTOR. It's not going to work. That's not going to make people live longer. Okay. I mean, turning it off completely. On the other hand, optimal muscle building requires frequent meals for mTOR activation and protein synthesis. On the other hand, though, longevity guidelines promote fasting protocols and minimal mTOR activation. That's not true. And protein synthesis. Does this mean that one cannot have the best of both worlds and that muscle building protocols fly in the face of longevity protocols? Which approaches can you suggest that may allow one to have big muscles while living the longest possible life? Thank you for a great show and keep up the good work. And I just want to put one thing in here.
Sure.
Do you want to live to be 100 but spend 30 years in a chair because you can't walk any longer? There's a very, you know, this whole idea that living longer at any cost is the goal. No. Ask any person in a nursing home if longevity is a blessing or a curse. Now, go ahead. You take it. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, remind me to bring it back to that because I saw my grandparents go through that same thing. But Andre brings up, right, a really good question here. And it's a topic that, listen, we're all going to have to confront at some point. Now, having said that, I think there were some assumptions in his questions that that I would challenge or at least question. So one of those being, you know, big muscles and longevity are mutually exclusive.
Right.
I am not convinced that that's the case. Now, there's an element of truth to the fact that really huge, maybe 300 and 400 pound people generally don't live as long as the smaller and lighter people. But the fact of the matter is, any good physician will tell you this, lean body mass and longevity are very positively correlated. And we also get to the issue of quality of life. Like you said, you know, it's fine and dandy to live to be 100, but if you can't get out of your bed, never mind, you know, walk around and enjoy life, is it really worth it? So I would tell you the following. I think the first and most important thing that you can do is to practice various versions of intermittent fasting, because the latest studies show that you can have it all. You know, it's done correctly, you can lose fat and gain muscle tissue. Now, I'm not saying you're going to gain.
And also stimulate the things that seem to currently, in today's understanding, attribute to longevity.
Right.
That's the real thing here, because what you're saying right now is actually spot on.
Right. So as with any topic, right, you've got two things. You can look at the science, but you can also look at anecdotal evidence, you know, real-world examples. Now, it is true, there's a small body of research relative to the other stuff that I'll discuss that shows that, you know, perhaps, yeah, overfeeding and massive amounts of muscle aren't going to, you know, result in you living for 100
But plus it's so hard. Rob, wouldn't you agree that it's so hard to tease out? When we talk about obese people that are carrying a lot of fat, we're really not talking about muscle at all in this case, right? And so we're really talking about people who are highly inflamed. Their inflammatory cytokines are profound. In fact, Lane Norton published a paper not too long ago that showed that both the carnivore diet and the vegan diet both resulted in a lowered inflammatory response in the body only when fat was lost. So that means it's the fat that's the problem, not the food that you're eating per se.
Yeah, and that's a great example of what I was getting to. There's a much larger body of scientific research that shows the benefits of strength training and being strong. Lower blood pressure, better cholesterol. The list is long that is attributed to strength training and positive benefits. Now, anecdotally, let's take a look at physical culture before the advent of pharmaceutical warfare, right? You look at guys like Steve Reeves or guys like Jack LaLanne, or even if you want to, go in the other direction, look at someone like Doug Hepburn, who was always
big guy, big guy.
Right. Big guy. These folks lived to age 75, 85, and greater.
Dan Lurie. Dan lived into his 90s.
Right. So prior to the wide-scale introduction of drugs and not just drugs, but, everything that comes along with that lifestyle, health and strength were synonymous. Longevity and strength and muscles were synonymous.
Where did it change? Right, that's the thing. Now you got to ask yourself. So what changed?
Yeah, but now here's one thing that I want you to walk away with, because it really illustrates, I think, the power of health and strength as physical culture was meant to be. Joe Rolino is not a name that most people remember. However, you will after this story. Joe was a strong man. He once lifted 475 pounds with his teeth. He had a 3,200-pound back lift, and his finger strength was what he was most noted for. He reportedly could lift 635 pounds off the ground with one finger. At the age of 81, he could bite into a quarter and bend it with his thumbs. So Joe was from New York City, mm-hmm. and one morning in 2010, he went out for his normal 5-mile walk in the morning, which otherwise would be unremarkable unless you knew he was 104 years old on this particular day. And unfortunately, at the very end of his walk in Brooklyn, he was hit and killed by an SUV.
I know, he was hit by a car. I was waiting for you to say it. This guy would have still been alive, and he was hit by a car. And I'm sure people are going to say, oh, well, see, he was a strength guy. No, he got hit by a car, for crying out loud. Right?
But to me, that really speaks to the merits of physical culture. Listen, none of us knows the day or the hour. There are too many variables in your genes and elsewhere that you either can't account for, or even if you did, you wouldn't be able to do anything about. Personally, I'm going to die with this philosophy. I'm going to die like I lived, big and strong. Because I sure as hell don't want to go out in a nursing home like my grandfather did, incredibly weak, and his quality of life, frankly, was not very good. I would rather go out having a heart attack in the gym at age 75 than spend 20 years in a nursing home and just be feeble. Maybe that's not the right approach, but for me, that's how I want it to happen.
I think the whole metformin thing is misguided. I think that what we are learning, and if we look back at the fathers of physical culture, they were not extremists when it came to diet.
Yeah.
There were no carnivore dieters. They definitely were low carbers. They knew that carbohydrates of a certain type, lots of sugars and starches,
right,
kept you from getting as lean as you wanted to get. But they weren't afraid of carbs. They ate a lot of vegetables.
Right.
They drank a lot of raw milk. So, but when we look back and what we know now, and even from I can't believe I'm mentioning Lane Norton twice in one show. But Lane came on my show probably before he was even had his doctorate. He came on my show probably in 2007, I want to say, and talked about a study that they had done up there at his university in Don Lehman's research lab, where they showed that the pulse is more important. If you have mTOR turned on continuously, you don't build as much muscle as when you pulse your protein feeding.
Right, right.
And that has been substantiated by another study that we talked about on my show probably 5 years ago that showed that baseline autophagy, autophagy is always on, but right, there's peaks and there's baseline autophagy plays a role in the protein synthetic response of muscle, which means that, once again, that valley is important. So Lane's lab discovered the peak was important, and that other study showed that the valley was important. We come back to this on and off, on and off. So having mTOR turned on all the time, bad idea. Having mTOR turned off all the time, equally bad idea. And what we're learning now that really works, something that actually reverses aging, not mTOR. I mean, not metformin, but rapamycin 1 day a week. Think about that. Wow. All week long, 1 day for 8 hours, you turn mTOR off. That's all you need.
Yeah.
So these people are misguided that are pounding down the metformin and going, well, I'm still building muscle. You know what? You can't do that when you get older. You may be able to do it now while you're on testosterone therapy and everything else. No, right. It's misguided. It is.
If people really want to know what's possible, I want you to Google the name Clarence Bass.
Oh, yeah, man.
Who today I think is 83 years old, and I'm willing to bet he is more ripped than anyone in the SHR audience, with the exclusion, of course, of Lars Thornholm.
Oh, my God.
He's from a different planet.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, 83 years old, check it out. That is what consistent, healthy bodybuilding can do for you.
In fact, that was the first book I ever read was by Clarence Bass, and I want to say it was called Ripped.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
It was called Ripped.
I remember that.
And when I read it, he was in his 60s already. I was like, wow, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, right. Or for that matter, Louis Simmons, right? He's in his 70s.
Yeah.
Still setting records. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Those would be my particulars about how to go about it. And listen, I think the future is wide open. I certainly think healthy aging, we have not heard the last word on it yet.
In fact, there was a black bodybuilder back in the day at Muscle Beach. His name was Victor something. Victor something. They have a couple. The picture that always goes around with him is he has black and yellow tight shorts on.
Yep.
And he has really, really cool wraparound sunglasses. And his hair was coiffed perfectly flat on top. And
Vic Richards?
What was it?
Vic Richards?
Maybe that was him, Victor. Maybe that was him. Yeah, I think that was him. But what people didn't know about him was that he only ever trained fasted first thing in the morning.
Wow.
So he didn't even realize he was a forerunner of intermittent fasting, because he'd have his first meal post-workout. Look, that's what you need to do. If you want to balance turning muscle on and mTOR on and turning it off, you have a 12 to 16 hour fast, and you train first thing in the morning,
right?
And then you eat every 3 hours thereafter, but you eat reasonably. You don't try to get 5,000 calories in that. And you know, you have meals with, you know, we know that to turn what everybody missed on the protein studies about the amount of leucine you need to turn mTOR on was that if you want to stay lean, but you want to turn the muscle building machinery on temporarily, 30 to 40 grams of protein is all you need per meal.
Yep.
That's all you need per meal.
Yep. Yep.
I don't care who you are.
Right. And studies at Skidmore and other universities are continuing to back that up.
Yes. So, you know, think about it. You could stay lean and you can build muscle at the same time by initiating your fast.
Yeah.
6 p.m. at night, next morning, train first thing in the morning, eat maybe 10 o'clock in the afternoon, in the morning after you're done training, and then eat every 3 hours thereafter, and make sure you get at least 40 grams of high-quality protein in every single one of those meals, and then stop again at 6 p.m. This is not rocket science, folks. It's not.
Right.
And you'll live long, too. I guarantee it.
Right. And it's not hard to do once you've done it, you know, for 3 weeks or so. It becomes secondhand. I have always said intermittent fasting should be used to potentiate short periods of overfeeding or frequent
Sure. And it's almost like you're feasted. It's like a micro. And I'm talking over Rob because his camera just froze. I hope he doesn't drop out. But Rob writes about feast and famines in his Blueprint Bulletin. And the reality is that you can have these micro feast and famine phases. He's coming back. Hold on a second. What I was saying, Rob, was you wrote about feast and famine in the first blueprint, blueprint. And basically what we're talking about here is microcycles of feast and famine. That's what we're really talking about here. Because we know that it boomerangs you into new growth.
I forgot I even wrote that. I don't think I was the first person to write about it, but I think certainly it had been a while since people had visited that topic, and I thought it was time to revisit it. So with some slight machinations, you know, we really took that concept and tweaked it up, you know, to the nth degree. And yeah, you're right. That was famine and feast.
And you know, the funny thing is I have a good friend that's getting ready to compete. Her name is Stephanie. And I told her, I said, you know, you're dieting down right now. In fact, she just sent me pictures. She's down to 168 pounds, I think. Wow. She looks amazing. I said, most people right after their competition, they just start eating and they blow up. I said, you are at the threshold of the greatest growth potential after this competition. If you continue to train and you gently start to increase your calories, you'll see some of the best gains. Why? Because you've been starving yourself and the body is like, oh man, we got food here. We got to build everything we can right now. And if you choose the right foods and you stimulate muscle growth, it's going to be muscle.
Right. And listen, there's science behind that. That's another topic for another time, but it's supported by the real-world evidence and science.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We got lots of good things to talk about today. So we're going to take one quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more of the Blueprint Power Hour. Visit CoachRobRegish.com at every chance you can. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Live On Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Live On's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl-L-carnitine, and alpha-lipoic acid to where they need to be, your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Wanting to try CBD but not sure what to trust? Check out H-Hemp. H, like healthy, happy, honest. H-Hemp CBD system makes it simple with one CBD tincture, available in three great tasting flavors, a super powerful breath spray that GQ magazine named a top CBD product, and a topical CBD balm that is simply the bomb. relax, and feel better naturally with the H-Hemp CBD system, available at hemp.com.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. I got Stephanie's weight really, really wrong. Did I say she's 168 pounds?
Yeah.
She's 128 pounds. I had to go back and look because I was like, 168, that doesn't sound right. She's too small for that.
Women love that, huh?
Oh, she's going to kick me in my ass when she sees me at the gym now.
Oh, jeez.
All right, so let's go to the next topic at hand.
Sure.
What would you consider the golden age of supplements and why? Isn't it still going on?
No, unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah, well, and this is just personal opinion, but for my money, the golden age of supplements, there were two. One was in the early 1990s. And one was in the late 90s and the early 2000s. So let me try to back up those statements for a bit. In the early 90s, right, wrong, or indifferent, Bill Phillips came along and really shook up the industry. There was a lot of innovation. There was a lot of money flowing into the world of supplements and supplement companies. And consequently, it attracted some of the best minds. So the golden age in the early 1990s, if you missed it, in short order, we had the following supplements hit the market. And bear in mind, this is after, you know, basically nothing had worked other than maybe liver tabs. In short order, we had Ultimate Orange, the original pre-workout drink, ephedrine, hydrochloride, dimetadrine 25, which was introduced by AST Research. Whey protein, the very first whey proteins hit the market in 1992, 1993. Depending upon who you believe, either Designer Protein or AST Research again. Metrex, if you remember that, started the whole meal replacement product craze. And there is a story, of course, behind that. And the big one, creatine monohydrate. I mean, think about this. We went from basically nothing that worked to a half a dozen products on the store shelves. And gosh, you know, I was hoping it would continue, but of course it didn't. And I'll back that up with the precise moment when it ended. Was when Bill Phillips said HMB feels like DECA. I hope you haven't tried HMB. I've warned against
it. Do you think that's because it gave him erectile dysfunction?
Yeah, man.
I mean, what else does DECA feel like? I mean, the only thing I noticed from DECA is that things don't want to work right anymore.
I never considered that.
DECA has such a low androgenic value that you don't feel aggressive, you don't feel energy, you don't feel excited, you don't feel any of that sort of stuff. It's highly anabolic, but it's very, very low androgenicity. So it's not going to give you that DHT or trenbolone or even testosterone feeling like, oh, man, I can conquer the world. The only thing it does do is it gives you, unfortunately, DECA dick is what they call it. So,
well, that's a good segue into the second golden age of bodybuilding supplements, which was the late 1990s. It was actually 1996 when Pat Arnold introduced androstenedione.
This is my favorite time in supplement industry, by the way. My favorite.
Yeah. And you know, unfortunately for me, I tried androstenedione. I tried a few of the others that came out after that. And I said to myself, this stuff doesn't do jack. So I kind of gave up on it until the very first four androstenediol transdermal products came.
Was that Avent? Was Avent Labs the one who introduced it first?
No. I don't know if they were first, but BioTest actually introduced a product called Androsol, which was four androstenediol in a very simple isopropyl alcohol base. Avent Labs, where they came in, was shortly thereafter. And their transdermals were very thin gels, But here's the key. They included penetration enhancers.
D-limonene and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Right. And I know you were right there in the thick of it, Carl, with, what was it, FloGel?
Yeah, I was selling FloGel to people who wanted to, because back then you could buy all the raw materials you wanted at One Fast 400, right?
Right.
Bulknutrition.com. And so people were buying, you know, 50 grams of androstenediol or androtrione or whatever it was that they wanted. And,
right.
And but then they were taking it orally. And so I started to teach people how to blend their own transdermals at home.
Right.
And that paper is still out there today. It's called Home Brewing with FloGel. And it doesn't have my name on it. It has my old forum name, Triceptor, on it.
Wow. Yeah, so needless to say, we all had a lot of fun during this time. But then it started to get carried away. You know, instead of 1 AD, which was the first real truly effective oral pro-hormone, and it was truly a pro-hormone, you know, put weight on you, about 10 pounds a bottle. Now, it's not 10 pounds on top of 10 pounds, but fact of the matter is, it worked, you felt it, and it was unlike anything else. Unfortunately, after that point, things like methyl-1 testosterone were introduced, which should have never, ever been put on the market. You know, yes, you gained a pound a day for 2 weeks, maybe three, but you felt like you had the flu, right?
Yeah.
And on top of that, there were quote unquote sterile transdermals, you know, a four diol sip, I think it was, and one test sip hitting the market that guys clearly were not using in a transdermal fashion. You know, they were sterile for a reason. You could even, just to give you an idea, like you said, the raws were available at One Fast 400 and other places. You could even buy the bulk four-diol cypionate powder, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
And the 19 NORs, you know, the precursors to DECA and all that stuff. And listen, for my money, now 4-diol was supposed to convert into testosterone, and it did. You know, people could debate whether or not it does so in one step or three steps or whatever. But for my money, the stuff was active in its own right. I don't think it needed any conversion at all. Now, again, that can be debated.
A lot of them didn't really need conversion. 4-AD didn't need conversion. And interesting, Darcy Clark said, and your liver physically hurt from methyl 1 test. And he's right, it did. It swelled up, in fact.
Yeah, you know, that's where I drew the line. My experience with that, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You know, I walked into GNC. It still blows my mind that you could do this. Walked into GNC, bought a bottle of Gasperi Methyl 1 tea, took one 5-milligram tab in the morning, put on a pound a day for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Then I got my lab work back. Never again. It put my HDLs in the cellar. Certainly liver enzymes were through the roof. And listen, you know, this is what I'll never forget. How do your heart and lungs keep up with a pound a day? I don't care if you're doing all the cardio in the world, which if you were responsible, you did to prepare your body for it. But look, it wasn't healthy. And by no means was it something you could use to build your body, because the second that you stopped taking it, you lost a pound a day, sometimes faster, so it was mostly water.
It was a very exciting time from the perspective of, for the first time ever, we had access over the counter,
right,
to real drugs, and then they became called designer steroids. Shortly thereafter, this whole class of molecules started to be called designer steroids, because they weren't being sold by pharmaceutical companies. They were being sold by supplement stores. And so they were really steroids, but, you know, wink, wink, there were supplements too. Some of them didn't work. So methyltrienolone, which is orally active trenbolone, which is the most anabolic. It makes methyl 1 test look like candy. It's horrible stuff. It makes you so strong, you get spontaneously stronger. You feel terrible. And it does destroy your liver because it was a pharmaceutical drug at one point in time. I can't think of the name of it, but it was a pharmaceutical drug that was designed for cancer patients to help them, you know, get through cachexia, you know, severe muscle wasting. But they developed cirrhosis of the liver. They developed liver cancer from the drug. So the pharmaceutical industry said, no, we're not doing that. Some bodybuilders still took it because they were asses. But then methyldienolone came around because it was just one small difference from methyltrienolone. And I remember taking it. I remember taking it came in 1 milligram tablets. I took as much as 5 milligrams a day. Didn't feel nothing. Didn't notice anything. It just didn't work.
That is very interesting because that was my exact same experience. On paper, that should have been a home
it should
run.
It should have been methyltrienolone. And in fact, when they were selling, the guy who introduced it, his name is Matt. Now, he is still in the supplement industry. I'm not going to give his last name because I don't know that he wants to be tied back to that. But his company was called Designer Steroids.
yes, I remember.
Yeah, and it was a flop. It was he and I have talked about it, you know, in the past many years ago. It was like, you know, it should have worked. Everything in the science showed it should have worked, and it just didn't.
And you know what happened was, in truth, most of those supplements / drugs, somebody opened the Vitatex, which are the Bible of steroids,
right?
And flipped through it. And found monsters like methyl 1 test and said, this has already been discovered. They've already done all the work.
Yeah, it's not on any banned list. It's not listed as an orphan drug anywhere. So it's like in this gray area where we could just sell it as a supplement.
Right.
I know. It was brilliant. It was brilliant.
And so
I mean, let's be honest. That is what really led to the anabolic steroid ban. It wasn't anabolic steroids that led to it. It was the fact that we found loopholes and cracks in the system where we could take these things that have been investigated and proven effective but weren't being used for whatever reason.
Right. And I'm sure that ticked them off to no end. But listen, whether you live through that era or not, we all learn from that. You know, and personally, what I learned was I did not use or I could not find one of those drugs / supplements to actually build my body to any great extent because I could never stay on them for very long. Maybe I was missing something, but, you know, that's just me. So if you miss those two, I would say, golden eras of supplementation, you missed out on a lot of fun. That's not to say there's not another one out there, but it's been, I mean, do the math. It's been 20 years.
So nobody. I remember one. Let's see if you remember this. So remember when methoxyisoflavone became popular because of this study on cows?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, methoxyisoflavone was fed to cattle in their normal feed, very small amounts, and the cows put on a lot more muscle weight than the cows that did not get the methoxyisoflavone. So, of course, it was being used as a feed additive for cows. And once somebody realized this, they decided that it would be good for humans too. And it's not harmful. It's not like it's harmful. I mean, it could have some estrogenic effects, to be honest with you, now that I look back at it.
Yeah,
it may have been a very powerful phytoestrogen. And people are going to say, well, how could estrogen put on muscle? Oh, estrogen's anabolic. Don't let anybody kid you. It is. But anyway, so what the company did, I can't remember the company. What the company did to make sure that people had some sort of effect from it, they put it in a liquid base of 100% pharmaceutical grade cholesterol.
Yes, I remember.
So every tablespoon you took had like 500 milligrams of cholesterol in it. And you're supposed to take it like three times a day. And guys probably saw rises in testosterone from that. They probably saw a rise in a bunch of cholesterol-based hormones occur. But we were literally, like when everybody else was going, statin drugs, cholesterol bad, we in the bodybuilding community, we were literally shoveling cholesterol in our mouths to get the methoxyisoflavone in it. Right.
Yeah, and you know what? Even prior to methoxyisoflavone, Ipraflavone
was another one, right.
When the research was done in Hungary on that, and of course I, along with most other people, took Ipraflavone. Of course, nothing happened. And then they came out with methoxy and said, oh, this is the one that's going to work.
Yeah.
So I don't think I ever went there with methoxy. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. They sold it in a, quote-unquote, chicken wire cholesterol base.
Right.
And because of that, some people saw results. Why? Cholesterol is the starting material for testosterone.
All right. If I told you that I have so many supplements that I just move out of my supplement drawer and into bags, but I don't throw them away because I think someday I'm going to want this. I actually have an envelope sealed, one of these aluminum envelopes, of methoxyisoflavone from back then. That I just never opened. Yeah, I'm thinking it's probably still good. It's completely sealed. It's hermetically sealed, vacuumed, and light can't get to it. And I'm thinking it's probably – maybe they'll come out with a study someday and they'll go, oh, it is good. This is what it's good for. And I'll go, oh, I have a whole bunch of it. That's
right.
Great.
Yeah. But I do remember that. That was – yeah. These are – that's what I'm saying. You know, you can look back and even though some of the stuff worked and some of it didn't, it was a great time.
It was exciting. It was exciting. We felt like we were getting over. We felt like we had found a loophole. We felt like the man – couldn't keep us down because we had these things that were legal to use and no one realized they were actually anabolic steroids.
Right.
That's really what it was.
Funny stuff.
I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we've got a couple more questions to answer. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Blueprint Power Hour.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Sleep is one of the most important factors in maintaining health and longevity. And in today's environment, with all the artificial light we're exposed to, there is nothing more important to use to protecting your sleep than blue blocking glasses. And there's only one blue blocking glasses that I will trust ever, and that's Blue Blocks, BLU. BLOX. If you go to the website blueblocks.com and use the code SHR15, you'll save 15% off the single best blue blocking glasses in the world because you can wear them comfortably and still function, watch TV, work on your computer, but it blocks all of the important blue and green light that has been responsible for shutting down melatonin production and causing people to sleep poorly. Don't waste another night of sleep without wearing Blue Blocks, BLU. BLOX tonight. Put them on at 7 p.m. and you'll be asleep by 9 p.m. and you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had. If you've never used them before, you are missing out. Blueblocks.com. Use the code SHR15 to save 15% off. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number 1.com. Or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. All right, so let's see what we have next on the agenda here. What would you consider dangerous movements or movements that are a waste of time in the gym, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, this is probably going to be the most controversial part of the show because while it's true some movements are better than others, there are also exceptions to every rule. There are movements, for example, that I don't dare perform or I get nothing out of. But other people, it might help them build their bodies. So understand the following list is just my own personal list. It might not be yours. I would say top of the list, things that are dangerous, I just don't like, upright rows. The shoulder is, you know, it is delicate enough. There's no reason to perform a movement like upright rows. And that's because a lot of people get carried away with the amount of weight that they use. And before you know it, instead of a controlled negative, you know, it's a free fall from 10,000 feet. And they're catching it at the bottom and then yanking back up. You're just asking for it, in my opinion. You know, rotator cuff, labrum. You know, there's a lot of things there that can go wrong. And the one injury that I have had, although it wasn't an upright row, was a shoulder injury. It was the only one that didn't heal on its own, that required surgery. So I would tell you upright rows, I'm not a fan. Secondly, any fly motion, I think, puts the pec delt tie-in in a very vulnerable position. And again, you know, we're talking about stressing the shoulders. And in my mind, anyway, part of your anatomy that is not quite the shoulder, but not quite the bench. It is that, or the pec rather. It is the pec delt tie-in. And when guys get, again, carried away with the amount of weight, bad things happen. Now, it doesn't, you know, by virtue of the fact that it is a isolation movement, you cannot use a lot of weight. Therefore, it doesn't take much weight to cause injuries. Just don't like it, never have. Number three, cable crossovers. Look, unless you look like Gary Stridham at his peak, or Lee Haney, or whoever Ronnie Coleman was the last Mr. O I remember. Unless you look like these guys, I don't see what a cable crossover is getting you. You know, some guys say, well, it gives me a pump. That's nice. But, you know, you can curl a can of Campbell's soup and get a good pump. It doesn't mean you're going to grow. Don't like cable crossovers. Never have. Next on the list, and this one's worse than cable crossovers, in my opinion, tricep kickbacks. Your triceps are absolutely 100% very important to train. Louis Simmons and Westside would tell you that triceps are the primary mover in the bench press. despite the fact that it's a much smaller muscle, right, than pecs and delts and that sort of thing. So do you need to train your triceps? Absolutely. Extremely important. However, that muscle gets most efficiently overloaded in big compound lifts, such as a close grip 4-board bench press or a 3-board bench press. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's simply the top of the range on a close grip press. You can use a lot of weight. You're working the triceps in conjunction with the other primary movers as they're meant to, and your risk of injury is extremely low. Now, tricep kickbacks, you're probably not as likely to get injured there as you are with some of these other movements. But listen, you can't use any amount of weight, really. So I just don't see what they're worth. And then finally, for lower body stuff, squats in the Smith machine. We just had the passing of Charles Poliquin, who wrote a book called The Poliquin Principles. I think it's out of print now. It's actually a collector's item and worth some money. But one of the things that I distinctly recall reading about and learning was the shearing force that the Smith machine puts on the knee. And it comes up, you know, through the shin to the knee and right down the quadricep muscle. As far as the Smith machine goes, I would steer very clear of that. The only thing I found it good for is to elevate my feet on one-arm push-ups. You know, you can go up and down gradually on that. You might find it useful for other things, but, you know, not squats. And for the same reasons, if you have never been taught to deadlift correctly or squat correctly, those can be very dangerous movements. You are best served, I think, to learn to squat on with a barbell on your back on a box. Why? Well, you'll always know you went to parallel, provided you set it up correctly. You'll build a tremendous amount of starting strength, because it's static overcome by dynamic work. And frankly, it eliminates a lot of errors that people make when they overthink the squat. Listen, if you can use a toilet seat, you can squat. Just don't overthink it.
Well, and if you and six other people sit down on a bench, you'll notice that all of you approach sitting down on the bench differently. Those of us who have longer torsos and shorter legs versus those of us who have longer legs and shorter torsos. Those of us who have different spinal pelvis geometries. So the problem with doing squats in the Smith machine, at least heavy squats. I mean, you can go really light. Like if you know, like the same thing like a sissy squat. If you were going to sissy squat just to hit the teardrop in the front of your quads, which is a good, effective isolation movement. And then you thought, well, I'll put a 35-pound plate on each side and I'll basically do a sissy squat where I'll lean back on the bar in the Smith machine. And so I'm literally doing a sissy squat and the bar is keeping me from falling backwards, but I'm pushing that weight as added weight up and down. Right. But you have to understand, and there is nothing truer than this when it comes to the squat and really the deadlift too. But no one deadlifts with the Smith machine, interestingly enough, because they figure this out quickly. But you are put in a groove. You are put in a groove, and that groove may not be your groove, because some of us, we lean forward halfway down and straighten up at the bottom and vice versa. And you can't do those things. You can't articulate all of the angles of your body as you're moving down and up in a squatting position when you're locked into that Smith machine that wants you to bend this way.
Yep.
It's a very, very dangerous thing. The reason that no one sensible deadlifts with the Smith machine is because you know that that bar just doesn't come straight up and down when you deadlift. It comes towards you at some points. Some points it moves away from you. Can't do that when it's locked into that groove.
Yeah.
Smith machine can be very, very dangerous, I think, if you're going to try to put weight on the bar.
Yep, I agree 100%. It's just something you should stay away away from.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are my top five. They might not be yours. I'm sure I missed a few, but I think you'd be well served to steer clear of those.
Michelle Hebert just said, two of my favorite people. Oh, that's so sweet. That really is sweet. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for being here.
You're a wonderful woman.
Yeah. Well, now we got to get your husband involved here.
Yeah. How come we never hear from him?
I don't think, I don't know. I think Michelle is the one that is campaigning for physical culture in the family. And that's good. Mom should. The kids will pick it up from you. So, okay. So I think that many of us mistake machine movements as primary movements. Like I'm working on machines a lot right now because my foot is messed up. I'm starting to squat again.
Yep.
But you know, machine movements have their place. There's no doubt about it. But you have to understand, you're not really building real strength, the kind that you would. If you're sitting down in a machine and you're chest pressing, you're going to activate pectoral muscles, but there are a lot of muscles you're not going to activate, as if you were laying on a bench and having to keep a bar in its place while you're going up and down. And the same is true of the Smith machine as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, with few exceptions, these machines balance the weight for you. So all you have to do is push or pull. In the real world, picking up a bag of groceries or a child, that's not the case.
No. Let's see. We have one more topic, I think, here that we have to cover. What do you think are the most underrated movements?
Yeah, so let's turn this around and try to use some of this information to better ourselves. Number one on the list would be trap bar deadlifts. Deadlifting, you don't see a lot of, and I don't know if it's because people are not comfortable performing it. Maybe nobody ever taught it to them. Secondly, it's considered to be, have a much higher injury risk than other lifts. And certainly if you're not performing them in the correct form, that can be the case. But the fact of the matter is this, the trap bar deadlift circumvents a lot of those problems. You know, your body mass will always be in the center of the lift. You are much less inclined to lean farther forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it develops a tremendous amount of power, as the traditional deadlift does, in your legs and back. So, you know, when you're looking at the trap bar deadlift, know that it probably works more muscle mass than any other lift. I can't think of another lift that works more muscle mass. It will do so using the greatest amount of weight. Studies show you can lift even 7% more than a regular deadlift. And it is extremely efficient. Somebody asked me a question just this morning. They said, hey, I'm starting a home gym. What do you think I should start with? Trap bar, brother. Invest in some, you know, some interlocking mats so you don't ruin your floor. But the trap bar can be used for a whole lot more.
You know what I use the trap bar for often?
Farmer's walk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could load it up and you get in the middle of it and you pick it up and you walk with it.
Yes. And listen, there's your grip work. There's your cardio. Right. And there's your strength endurance. So it's a tremendous asset for deadlifting, for farmers walks. Also, if you buy one, try to make sure you get one with long enough sleeves on it. Why? You can put it in the power rack and think about it. You can do military presses with it. And the best part of that is that the handles feature a pronated grip. I'm aware that some of them allow you to grip it any which way. But with a pronated grip and in the very center, again, of your body, you know, exposing the shoulder to much less risk, mm-hmm. and allowing you to exert greater force on the bar. A lot of people, myself included, when they go to military press a regular barbell, the tendency, especially when the weight gets heavy, is to push the weight forward,
mm-hmm.
almost like a bench press.
Or try to correct that by leaning so far back, you end up hurting your lower back.
Correct. So, you know, that's an easy trap to fall into, right? And I'm the guy that's given answers every week, and I'm having issues with that. Why? You can avoid all of it just by using the trap bar and the overhead press. It's an upper body builder. It's a lower body builder. It is a total body builder in an excellent movement. So
interesting.
In addition to that, the top range rack pull is extremely underrated. Most people, when you see performing rack pulls, will do so below the knees. And that, listen, that's a valid application. What I'm talking about is setting the barbell up such that as you dip your knees a little bit, okay, and get your legs into the motion, you stand up pulling it just an inch off of the very top, just pulling it off the pins. What does this allow? It allows you to use more weight than virtually any other movement in the gym. And here's what's important. And it requires you to co-contract every muscle in your body simultaneously, which is the very definition, okay, of strength. It is the gateway to a central nervous system that you can light up like a Christmas tree with this movement. It is not just for your upper back. It is not just for your traps. It works every muscle in your body from the back of your neck down to your Achilles tendon, and you better believe everything on the front of your body too. I defy anybody to pull 600, 700, however many pounds, and not, for example, flex their abs as hard as possible, right? Statically contract it, or not contract your pectorals. It is impossible. The other great thing about that movement is it doesn't take much out of you, and it's extremely safe. Why? The amount of trunk flexion is almost zero. Okay, it's up and down. Number three on my list, underrated movements, would be any neck exercise. If you got a four-way neck, you know, God bless you. You got a lot to work with there. But if you don't, God, look, the neck's on display 24/7 every day of every year. It makes no sense to me to neglect it. It makes all the sense in the world to me to develop it. Because, again, that's one of the gateways to greater strength, right? The message to contract muscle starts in the brain, goes through your neck, into your spinal cord, and runs on a nerve to the muscle telling it to contract. Like any other electrical message, the more efficient that gets through, the stronger you're going to be. Next on my list of underrated movements would be machine-based pullovers. In general, right, I favor free weights, obviously, for most of my stuff. But the fact of the matter is, when Arthur Jones built Nautilus pullover, he invented a better mousetrap, okay, for the simple reason that any back exercise, you're not truly exhausting your back. Why? Because the bicep needs to contract, and being a much smaller muscle, will fail earlier. That's not so with the pullover, especially if you can remember to pull the weight over with your elbows, right, and not necessarily your hands.
Right.
Take some getting used to, but you know, it's not a difficult thing to do.
There was a guy at the gym the other day, and I asked him if we could work in, because you know I'm a big fan of the Nautilus pullover. And he was on it already. I said, you mind if I work in with you? And I start out with like 170 pounds and I work my way up. Yep. And he was already at like 200 and something pounds. And so he really wasn't even using, he was using his brachials and his biceps to get the weight moving. It was very clear. And then I sat down and I did a set where I didn't hold on to the bar. Right. And he goes, wow, that looks interesting. I said, yeah. I said, you'll have to lighten up if you want to do it this way, because this way it's exclusively your back. He didn't think he'd have to. He pinned it where it was before, and he tried. He couldn't even move it. He couldn't get it down. He couldn't complete a full rep. He had to literally go down to 120 pounds.
Wow!
In order to do one without holding on to the bar.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it looked like I was working a lot harder than he was. He realized, because it's a very different movement when you're just using the back of your arms to push, to pull that weight down.
Yeah, but it pays dues there to put your ego aside, right, to do it the right way. because, you know, it gets back to you do a little bit more the next week and the next week and the next week. So that would be another movement that's way underrated. And then finally, I don't know if you call it a movement per se, but sprints. If you can sprint, you have a tremendous tool, asset, whatever you want to call it, on your side. Why? Because it will simultaneously build and teach you to contract every muscle in your body, like the top range rack pull. And the best part, it blowtorches fat off your body. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'll always remember is that even if I was doing no other cardio and my diet wasn't exactly spot on, provided I sprinted twice a week, that was the tightest waistline I ever had. Mm-hmm. It was probably the best I ever looked. And frankly, it's one of those things that people overlook. Now, since, let's say, age 45, when I've tried sprinting, I've pulled hamstrings, which is obviously a very bad thing. Now I can't squat and deadlift. Those are my primary movers. However, where there's a will, there's a way. I did find that I could sprint pushing a weighted sled or pulling a sled or sprinting up a hill.
So in other words, if when your legs are allowed to just run freewheeling, that's when right. you end up hurting your hamstring.
Yep. Yep, absolutely, 100%. I did this just yesterday with my son. I had him take an empty prowler and sprint with it six times, up, back, up, back, up, back, at which point, of course, he was second wind. And then I just put a nominal amount on, you know, 100 pounds, and I did it 10 times, you know, in part to teach him, listen, you know, I'm going to walk the talk here. I'm never going to ask you to do something that I myself
wouldn't do. Right.
But it is amazing the difference that sprints of various sorts will make, it not only in your performance, but also in your physique. And, you know, I've seen kids, young kids, sprinting today, whether that's from first base to second base or, you know, on soccer fields or basketball courts. Kids have lost the ability to move fast and to increase their quickness. It takes them forever, okay? And what you'll notice is the people that train with weights, especially with big compound movements, are always faster than the people that don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So trap bar deadlift, top range rack pull, any neck exercise, machine-based pullovers, and sprints. You know, if you can do even two or three of those, you'll be ahead of the competition.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. I hope that I can sprint again someday. I don't know.
Yeah. Do they have sleds at your gym?
Yeah, no, they don't have any sleds at my gym. No, they do. I take that back. In the CrossFit area, they do. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, start easy. You know, just start with an empty prowler. Sprint up, back as many times as you can until you can no longer sprint. And as you progress, for example, I said I loaded it with 100 pounds. You sprint until you can't sprint anymore. Then you take half the weight off, 50 pounds, and now you'll find you're able to sprint again.
Right.
So, and of course, when you can no longer sprint with that, strip all the weight off, and you'll find you can still sprint. It is tremendously intense. It is not pleasant, but it will get you into the best shape of your life. And here's something interesting. If you work hard on increasing your anaerobic fitness, you'll find that your aerobic fitness automatically improves. The reverse, however, is not the case, which is to say, if you work sprints hard, you'll have no problem jogging a longer distance. If, however, all you do is jog, you're not going to be able to sprint for very, very fast or very long. It's really an interesting dynamic.
It's funny. So walking for me right now is where I'm at, right? I'm walking. So I train in the gym one day a week, and then the next 2 days I just do cardio, because just walking and getting my foot to work, and also the leg strength just still isn't there. I mean, it's my legs literally now are thicker than they were three workouts ago. There's no doubt. I mean, yeah, it's coming back fast, but that's not – that's just fluid pulled into the muscle at this point in time.
That's but still, you know, it's something that you can point to and say, hey, I'm getting better.
Well, and so this morning what I did was this morning I went out for my walk. I go for a 40-minute walk, come back to the house. Then this morning I grabbed two 55-pound kettlebells and I walked up and back the street and then dropped those. And then I'm not ready to start jumping rope, but I know jumping rope is going to be critical for me to get that left calf back to normal. So what I did was I did sets of 20. I did 10 sets of 20 where I just – like I was jumping rope but without a rope in my hand.
Wow.
And I got to tell you something. My calf is sore right now, my left calf, because it's not used to doing anything. It's been for 6 months out of last year, it was isolated and locked in where it couldn't even flex.
Wow.
So this is going to be a slow, hard journey back. And it's not easy. I'm telling you, man, it sucks. Like, just I, the other day when I was walking, I thought, let me just try. I don't have the spring in my calves to run right now.
Right.
It's like the lower legs, the upper legs are working, but the lower legs, they're just not working right because my calves don't have that spring in them where when you run, you just kind of just spring off. I have to literally think about firing my calves right now.
Yeah, maybe that's the term that I was looking for when I said kids just don't know how to sprint today. They don't have the spring in their legs. They don't have the central nervous connection from their brain to the various muscle groups to boom, turn it on like that. You know, it's a very much longer, more inefficient process.
Yeah, it's you know what? If you've had it, you'll get it back, but it could take time. If you've never had it, you don't know what we're talking about. And you're like, what are you guys talking about? Yeah, no. I was always an amazing sprinter. And I sprinted, and you're right. When I was squatting the heaviest, my sprints were super fast. In fact, I would sprint so fast, I would shock myself. And I would actually slow down because I think, you know, I got to be careful. I'm going to hurt myself.
Right.
And I sprint on the balls of my feet. My heels never touch the ground when I sprint.
Yeah, I cannot do distance for the life of me. But the people that have seen me sprint have been amazed that I can put 245 pounds into motion that quickly.
Right.
And I'm not saying I'm a world-class sprinter, but, you know, relatively speaking, you don't see people this size moving at that pace.
Right.
So right. It's something to work on.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's one of those evolutionary gifts. Being able to sprint means someone in your past saved their own lives by getting out of the way of something quickly.
Well, I don't know what it was, but I'm grateful for it.
No blueprint tip of the day today, huh?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to put it together. And, you know, if I can't do something justice, if I can't do it right, I'd rather not do it.
No, but, I don't understand.
All things considered, I think we covered a lot of great topics today, including
we did.
You know, this stuff right here. You take any one of those movements, insert it into your routine, you know, and come back and talk to me 3 weeks from now. I think you're going to see what I'm talking about.
We were supposed to have Adele Musa on tomorrow to talk about all these new light therapy units. We're going to have to push. Well, we got to push it off till next week because he's got some things going on personally that in his house he's having some repair people over.
Yeah.
And so I may have told people earlier in the week that we were going to have him on, but it's not going to be this week. It's probably going to be next week.
Is the peptide show going to be this week?
No, that's next week. Next week we're talking about the copper tripeptides. These are going to be really interesting.
Yeah, gosh.
Some of them regrow hair.
Better than minoxidil, I bet.
Oh, no, they really regrow hair. Like.
Do they regrow hair just on the top of the head?
Wherever you inject it.
Wow.
Yeah, the research was done in France many years ago.
Yep.
On the I think it's called I want to say it's called GKU, copper peptide. It's a tripeptide. It's a very small peptide, three amino acids, and it regrows hair.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I've been using minoxidil.
How's it work?
You know, it works great. It takes about 3-4 months, but it's almost completely filled in.
So minoxidil is not Rogaine, right? That's not finasteride, right?
I thought Rogaine was the trade name for the chemical minoxidil. I could be wrong, but whatever it is, it says put it on twice a day, but I just put a little dab of liquid on before I go to bed, and man, big difference.
Because I think minoxidil is different than Rogaine. I just have this, I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah, Darcy Clark said the ability to run and sprint with proper mechanics is a lost skill. It is. They don't make kids do anything in school anymore like this because they don't want to hurt anybody. I think Rogaine actually has finasteride in it, which is a DHT blocker. But instead of taking it orally, you're rubbing it on your head. I think Rogaine is different than minoxidil. I do.
I would think a DHT inhibitor would be dangerous to put on the market. God forbid pregnant women handle it.
It says that when you on the Rogaine bottle, I'm pretty sure it says that. On the Rogaine bottle, I think it's pretty sure. Here, Darcy Clark is saying Nizoral is great for taking care of DHT at the scalp. Huh. It must be another product.
Yeah.
But, you got to make sure that it's not ketoconazole. Yeah, ketoconazole. Yeah, now that ketoconazole is actually a fungal, an antifungal. So that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well, needless to say, you know, it's better than it was 20 years ago. So I owe some hair to minoxidil.
There's all these. We actually have a new sponsor coming aboard. We'll start doing spots for them in about a week or two called Keeps. And it's about keeping your hair. There's a lot of these new companies popping out of everywhere that are focusing on helping men keep their hair. It's really pretty cool. Yeah. It's sold in dandruff shampoos. It's sold in dandruff shampoo. Okay. Yeah, good news. Good news. That's good to hear. I got the male pattern, the receding hairline. I would like to make that hair grow back. I'm going to try the copper peptide once we do the show on it.
Great. I can't wait to hear about it.
I wonder if Elisa can inject me in the scalp. I don't think so. I think she's not into that kind of stuff. Because, you can't go too deep, obviously, because there's bone right there. You don't have a whole lot of place to put the needle. So.
Right. Wow. Well, that's exciting stuff, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all good. Thanks for being here today, Rob. CoachRobRegish.com is the place to go if you want to be stronger tomorrow. And I don't think we have a show tomorrow, but that's okay because I have a lot to do here at the studio anyway. So we will see everybody when we see you. How about that? Great. Okay. Great. Take care.
Thank you.
Play some music.